somewhere in your backyard and garden, as it were. Now, Toddington itself, how did Toddington come about? What's the history of Toddington?
Well, it's unknown totally, the very old history, but it was in the Domesday Book. And we got a hill in Toddington called Conga Hill, which is an earth mound. And the historians believe it was built by the Anglos to stop the invading Saxons. So that's possibly the earliest
part. So that's
part.
Going back, you know...
Yeah, I mean, it's not a building, but it's something that was made
it's there,
before.
Yeah, sure.
All the buildings that were made there are gone. And, of course, the village pond's interesting. We got a village pond, which is just across the road. And I think that must have been the start of Toddington. The water supply, people would come. It's on a hill. It's a good place to defend. There's a water supply. And that must have been the earliest beginning.
So it dates back at least, 1,000 years, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, as history went on in Toddington, was this area renowned for any particular trade? Was there a trade that kind of Toddington grew on?
We had a market from about 1500. It was a crown registered market.
Oh, right.
So it was donated by the crown at the time, and that market flourished for centuries. It was only the railways come into Luton and Dunstable that there was a slight demise in Toddington after that period.
So I mean, Toddington was quite a big place in as much as, you know, going back in history, Toddington was quite a big place within the area, within local.
Oh yeah, I think in 1800 there was about 18 pubs.
At one point it was in the Guinness Book of Records, wasn't it, for having the most pubs per square mile or something, was it? Or
well, I think it was just the village with the most pubs. Because we got 8 pubs and a club, so we got 9 pubs.
Which, I mean, for the size of the place now, it's quite a lot, isn't it?
Well, Toddington's quite big. It has expanded.
Right.
And this is the good thing that's happened. We went down when the railways came, the market, the demise of the market after about 400 years of markets. And since then, the motorway has actually brought
people back in. Yeah,
people
sure.
Because we are in a commuter belt, and yeah. So
that's right. I suppose a lot of the villages in and around, you know, kind of this area, Toddington, Westerning, you know, Flitwick, some of the places all around in kind of Bedfordshire have become that kind of place where people will live and commute to London.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
I mean, what does Toddington mean to you personally? I mean, how long have you lived here?
Well, I've been.
Why
around...
did you come here?
I've loved it. I first came to Toddington in 1942.
Oh, God, you've been here that long?
Yeah, no, I didn't live here, but I came and actually in people's houses in Toddington.
Right.
I lived in Dunstable, and I was born in Dunstable. And their family went go back in Dunstable to 1766, so I've traced the family history back in Dunstable.
I see, sir.
And we hobbled around we lived in Tibworth, and we lived in Wingfield, and we've been living in Toddington in the High Street for 10 years. So, we've been around for 35 years around Toddington.
And you're pretty settled here in Toddington now, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah, love it.
Well, I can see why, and if I can explain, we're sat in Alan's kind of back garden, and it's absolutely stunning, I must say. It's kind of split up into several areas, isn't it? And we've got a couple of fish ponds here and whatnot.
3 fish ponds, yeah, and my chicken aviaries or chicken houses.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about later on. And here, I think you can just probably hear in the background as well. And the house itself, I mean, we were talking about the history of Toddington and going back quite a few years. I mean, this house itself looks as if it's got some history and is fairly old. I mean, are you aware of the history of your own house?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've done a lot of research on it, and it's the most interesting house I've ever owned. We always had older houses, thatched cottage ones and what have you, but this one's the most interesting I've ever owned. And it was like the house detectives when we moved here, crawling through the loft space and looking at the beams, and I had a local historian look at it, and it was on the map in 1581, and he reckoned it was 500 years old, the middle section. And then the part where we're sitting, that was built in about 1700. The Georgian front was put on in 1830, and it then became a pub called the Greyhound, and they built a coach house, a stable and a hayloft, which I've now converted into living accommodation.
Yeah, it's quite long, isn't it, as the house goes? It's quite long rather than a wine house.
Yeah.
So you say you've refurbished the place a little bit, but an immense amount of history dating back, you know, 500 years. When you were refurbishing, was there any parts of the house that you kind of kept for historical value and kept for kind of, you know, memories for yourself and to look at and say, well, this is what the house used to be?
Oh, yeah. I'll show you inside later. I'll show you some of the character and some of the parts that we particularly went out of our way to preserve. And also, whilst digging up the ground and lifting floorboards and going behind cavity walls, and we found just knickknacks or artifacts, and I saved them all. And I kept them for years in a plastic bag. And then when I went to Barnfield College, we had to make a box after the style of Joseph Cornell. He was an American guy in the 40s who made boxes and put trinkets in the boxes for his brother, actually. And they're works of art now. So we had to assimilate a sort of box. So I'd got my goodies, so I put them in a box, and they're preserved forever now.
Any chance of having a look?
Yeah, we can have a look.
Let's go and have a look. Oh, we're up there, are we? Wow. Right. These steps are a bit steep.
I know.
Hey. Oh. Wow. So is this room used for anything in particular, Alan?
Yeah, this is my studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, above the garage. And made a nice room, and it's all insulated. And I can hide away up here.
Yeah.
And
get away from the world.
Do art, drawings. And that's the box I was mentioning to you. Yeah.
So tell me about some of the things that you found that I can see in front of me there. I mean, what are they there? They don't look like much to me, but tell me.
Well, they're two mummified cats that were in the fireplace. You can see the claws on them, little bits of fur, and so they're preserved forever now in a glass case. They weren't put in. People used to put cats in for superstitious reasons, to keep off evil spirits, but they're kittens, really. I think they fell down the chimney. Oh. I wouldn't say they were bricked in on purpose, but they did used to brick cats in houses to keep off evil spirits. And people have since found the skeletons and mummified remains.
Well, tell me about some of the other bits you've got in your case.
Well, the beer bottle was under the floorboard. We got two. We got one indoors. That was obviously from the days when it was a pub in 1860. There's a little Georgian toy, which is a little man on a horse, and that's about 1830. There's a nameplate from Major Hawley. He used to make and patented a patent greenhouse system from this house, and he used to build coffins here as well.
Oh, so this was his house?
This was his house. Yeah. This is in the 1910. There's an old clay pipe. There's some horse brasses that were in the stable. Some playing cards without any numbers on. Some old tools, screwdriver, a new piece of old newspaper from 1911, some old, very old nails, big nails, a little Baker-like plug, a little ornament, pieces of cut glass.
Some really nice finds then. I mean, an old
six silver sixpence.
It must have been quite exciting finding all this stuff as you were kind of renovating and doing up the house.
Yeah, rather than put it in a skip, it went in a plastic bag, and now I found a nice home for it, and it's preserved for eternity.
Yeah, really nice. Part of the house, I suppose, more than anything else, isn't it? Part of the house's history.
Yeah.
The building's history. Well, look, one of the main reasons I came out to see you today was your bantams, and you breed bantams, don't you?
Yes, I bred them since 1978.
So, sure.
So 25 years.
Well, I suppose it's about time we went and had a look at those bantams then.
Certainly.
We've come into what area did you call these? You called it a kind of aviary before, didn't you? But that's obviously for birds. Is it a coop or?
It's a chicken house.
Chicken house.
Chicken house. That's what they're.
Well, I wanted to use the correct name for it, Alan. I didn't want to say something that was wrong. I mean, what got you interested in these birds? I mean, what got you interested in the first place, going back, 20, 30 years?
Well, we kept chickens as a kid. You know, my parents kept them for food, basically, and eggs in the war. And so I was always grew up with chickens when I was a kid. Used to go in and have them sit on my knee, and one day I thought, I want some chickens, so I got some. Yeah,
and it just went from there. I mean, how did you learn how to breed them? And how, you know, it's fair enough keeping a few chickens in the back garden. But I mean, this is obviously something that's become a passion. And I mean, how did you learn all about it? Was it just from reading books, or did you go on a course? Or?
No, slowly. Yeah. You join the breed club and you go to shows, because we show them, of course. That's what we breed them for. So you go to shows and you talk to people, and yeah, books as well. Yeah.
I mean, you said you take them to shows. I mean, what does that involve? How do you show a bantam?
Well, they're showed in cages, which are 18 inches cube.
Right.
And on the day, you put your birds in. It's rather nice because the judges don't know whose birds they are. There's none of this like dog shows where the owner is evident. So it's totally sort of unbiased.
What are the judges actually looking for when they look at the bird itself?
Well, it all depends what breed it is. Different birds have got different characteristics.
Well, I'll tell you what, that brings us on to the fact that there is, in the chicken house here itself, several different types of bantam. So talk me through some of the types of bantam.
No, they're all the same type.
Oh, they are?
They're all modern game bantams.
Ah.
They're different colour varieties.
Oh, right, OK.
So same birds, different colours.
Oh, right, so there's that.
So here you've got a black-red. That's the basic colour. That cockerel over there and a female. These are cuckoo.
Right.
They're called birchin. There's some brown reds, and there's some silver blues, and there's a creole, which is a cross colour. So there's several different colours of the same variety of chicken.
And tell me, so when you are at a show, for instance, if they were, you know, what would they look for? Would they look at the feathers, the look of the bird?
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I'll get one out and show you.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
And then perhaps you can describe it. So if we take a bird and stand it up,
yeah,
it's got to stand and stand tall and obviously be tame. It's no good if it's going to peck the judge. Right. It's got to be tame. And the judge will look at it standing up, and then he'll also... This is funny. They never behave when you want them to, do they?
No. Difficult.
But a judge will take the bird, he'll look at the wings, check the feathers, check the flight feathers. He'll look to make sure it's got no mite on it or fleas or anything, and check the cleanliness of the legs. He'll look at the eye colour. So a judge will handle each bird individually, and then he will put the bird in. The bird's got to also show itself. So they're trained in show pens. You train them with tidbits of bread and cake and any tidbits. You train them to feed and come towards a person rather than be shy of a person. So you train the bird to be used to people, tamed. And of course, we give them a bath before each show. They have a bath.
How do you? No, let me get this straight. How exactly do you bath a bantam?
Well, you have soapy water, and I have a cup.
Yeah.
So you put it in water, tip water over it. You lather all the feathers up, and then you give it a really thorough rinse, and then you dry it with a cloth, pushing the feathers the way the feathers go, and then break any feathers, and then I put a hairdryer on them. Give him a blow dryer.
It just sounds a bit bizarre talking about it like the way you're talking about it, in as much as a hairdryer and whatnot. But I mean, it's renowned that cats hate water. What are bantams like when they get covered in water and get cleaned? Are they happy about it, or is it something you have to force a little bit?
Yeah.
They're okay with it, are they?
Someone said to me, "Oh, that's cruel." I said, "You watch." And I had some cut maize in my pocket, and you pull it out in your hand, and it's underwater eating. So it can't. I just feel the bird, as long as it's warm.
Yeah.
Now, you must have put them out. When they're wet, they die if you put them outside in the winter.
Oh, really?
So I keep them indoors overnight very often.
Right.
So they're in a very warm environment, so they're totally dry. So,
Now, you spoke a bit about the Modern Game Breed Club earlier on. Now, weren't you president of that club at one point?
Not president. I was secretary for 14 years.
Oh,
but I gave up at the AGM in December after 14 years, because I'm doing my art studies and I've got to go to university. So I'm just not going to have the time. And I think 14 years is enough.
Is enough, yeah.
And it's great fun.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of things were you doing in that time? I'll tell you what, let's have a little step outside if we can, Alan. You're a noisy bunch. As in your 14 years as as secretary of the Modern Game Club, I mean, what kind of things were you involved in? What did you have to do?
Well, newsletters. We did two newsletters a year, so you make little publications and send them out. You keep a list of all the members' addresses and what have you. And I also did a lot of stuff on the internet with websites on it. And this was absolutely wonderful because I met so many people from all over the world. I've had people visit me from... come to this house when they come to England from South Africa, from Australia, from Holland.
Oh, this is something that goes on all over the world.
Denmark,
it's, you know, something.
Yeah. When they come to England, we're quite near London. They say, oh, I'm in London on holiday. Can we come down and meet you for real? Because you've met on the internet, yeah. And we got that bond of keeping the same breed of chickens. And we also correspond with the clubs in Australia and the clubs in America. We exchange newsletters with those clubs.
Right. I mean, what is it about? What is it about the Bantams? What is it that you find so appealing? What is it that you love about the birds themselves?
I just think it's a feature because you're always looking for the next year. There's never a boring time because next year you think, I'm going to breed a champion. I've won some best in shows. I've never had a
champion. Oh, you have?
Yeah.
What, on a national level or local level?
Yeah, local level. I've had best in show in London and what have you. But I've never won the national. I mean, that is the big...
That would be the big one.
That would be the big one.
Well, I mean, you, we spoke earlier on off tape. You said that you've kind of scaled down a lot of what you had been doing in the past, you know, being secretary of the club and other stuff to concentrate on your art, the stuff that you're doing at art, and that's exactly where I met you at Barnfield College.
Absolutely,
Getting involved with the course there. I mean, how has the art progressed? I mean, how have you taken hold of that from being a kind of doing it as a hobby and doing it as something that you just love to being really into it as much as you are now and scaling everything else down?
Well, I've always enjoyed art. The only prize I ever got at school was a school art prize at Dunstable Grammar School. And then life just went. I mean, you leave school and you get married, you have families, grandchildren. And it was something I wanted to do again. I always promised myself I wanted to do art. And finally, in 1995, it was triggered at a car boot sale. I went to a car boot sale and there was a set of acrylic paints going for a song. I bought them and I haven't looked back. It's been my hobby ever since.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Why don't we get a cup of tea, sit back down where we were before and have a little chat about your works of art.
Go on, then.
I'll tell you what, they are noisy, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about the painting that you've done and you're doing. And that this place, this room we're in at the moment, which you use for where your computer is and your photocopier or whatnot, this used to be the stables. And what's this part on the wall here that's left over that you've left from the stables?
Oh, that's the hay rack. So that's where the horses used to eat. You put straw up inside it or hay,
yeah,
and they would pull it out as they needed it.
I'll take it that was a conscious decision then to leave that in here.
Absolutely, yeah. You imagine the plasterer trying to plaster behind it. Yeah.
No.
He said, "Can I take that out?" I said, "No, that stays. That's part of the house."
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it had to stay, and it's good fun.
You know, talking about the art and the painting. I mean, is there a particular style that you use? Do you use watercolours or do you use pencils? Or I mean, how do you paint yourself? Is there a particular style?
In the last 2 years, going to Barnfield College, this is what I went for, is to broaden your horizons. I used to paint in acrylics and watercolour.
Right.
And pastels, but now we do everything. We do silk screen printing, we do lino cuts, we do etching, aqua tinting, and I do a lot of digital art where I actually paint on the computer with a Wacom pad, which is a digitizing tablet. So instead of using the mouse, you've got a pen, a wireless pen that works exactly the same as natural media.
And you kind of take it on to the next level. You're using the PC that's in front of us here to actually create pictures.
Oh yeah.
I mean, how good is it? I mean, do you want to log on and
certainly? Yeah. I'll click into Painter because that's the basic, and you open a.
Because I mean, I used to go on these kind of matte paint things, and they never really were that good. I never found, but I mean, using a mouse. Well,
things have advanced so much. I mean, we're in Painter now, and you can choose a pencil, an airbrush. You can choose a watercolour. You can choose oil paint. You can choose pastel, chalk. And then you can put photographic effects on it. So, for example, if I pick a piece of chalk, you'll see, and I pick a bright green colour, when it comes on the screen...
It's chalk effect, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
It's a grainy effect. And if you go to a sable brush in oil paint, and we pick a bright blue, you can see that as it's a pressure-sensitive pen. If I do a light stroke, you get a light stroke. But as I press, you get a broad stroke.
Just as a
natural paintbrush would, if you press on it. If you've got a bristle brush that's on a point, you do fine lines, or you do broad lines. And you can set the opacity of the paint. It's transparent anyway, till you put it on really thick. And so every media is available.
I mean, do you see this as kind of the next step, or something that just runs hand in hand with hands-on proper painting?
Painting,
you know what I mean by proper painting?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, because it's debated quite a lot.
Yeah,
it's another media, that's all.
Yeah.
It's just another way.
Another outlet, as it were.
And it's not meant to be anything better.
Your life seems pretty busy and pretty full. So what have you got planned for the next few years? What have you got planned in your life?
I take each year as it comes.
Yeah.
I've got nothing actually... No. I think when I've finished my art studies, I'm going to university to finish my degree. I would like to become an independent artist, do a bit more art, and I would like to give something back. I would like to be able to guest lecture. I mean, I'm not going to go and get a job at my time of life.
No.
But I'd like to think that I can go somewhere and do a guest lecture and talking about it. Yeah,
superb.
Yeah.
But I mean. And the chickens, I mean, the bantams, what have you got planned for them? Are you going to keep breeding the bantams?
Oh, yes, I want to keep breeding them. I mean, eggs are set...
Do you eat the eggs, by the way? I meant to ask you that earlier on.
Oh, yeah, all winter and summer we eat the eggs, but in the spring I hatch everyone out that they lay.
Oh, right, so it's...
For a period now, I set my incubator on Sunday. It's right behind you in that cupboard.
Oh, right, yeah.
So if you look in here in this cupboard...
So, I mean, how does that work? So
there's an incubator in the cupboard with...
I mean, how long will that take, Alan?
Well, 20 days.
20 days, so they'll be in there for 20 days.
Yeah. They'll hatch on a Saturday. They're absolutely spot on. Yeah, there's no messing about.
And what's it like when they all hatch? Is it quite a special time for you?
Oh, yeah, every year. I mean, although I've done it for 25 years...
You still get that buzz, that excitement,
and they come out... Absolutely perfect, you know, these little fluffy chicks. Well, they're wet and bedraggled to start with.
Yeah, sure.
But give them about 20 hours in the incubator, and they're independent. All they can't do is keep themselves warm.
But they're...
They eat. They don't need a mother to teach them how to eat or to teach them to do anything. But so they go under heat lamps. They stay in the incubator about a day, and then I put them under infrared lamps and... Watch them.
So when are these due to be hatched in this?
They're due... I've set them Sunday night, so they'll hatch 2 weeks on Saturday.
2 weeks on Saturday.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah, good stuff. Well, for Easter, you know. I always get chicks for Easter.
Oh, that's a bit clever. Was that planned?
I always plan that.
Yeah.
It's always nice. People come around Easter.
Yeah.
Grandchildren come around.
Oh, I bet they love it.
There's the Easter chicks running about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Well, it's been really interesting coming here today, and I really appreciate your time and for showing me around, showing me all about your painting and your chickens, and look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, certainly.
Thanks,
Alan. Anytime.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Thanks to Luke. Luke will be out and about across Beds, Hearts and Bucks again at the same time next Sunday morning with the Great Outdoors.